You will move ahead of us and follow my directions. This way. Immediately.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast number 153. I'm Adam and with me this week, as usual, Kirby Bartlett Sloan.
I was in the swimming pool.
Is that how, why you took so long to come on?
That's right.
Robert Strange Noise Haynes.
Oh, and delete your internet history.
I think I need to delete, your...
What is wrong with his connection today?
Oh, he's always got some issue. Reese Parton.
You just summoned aliens back to Earth? Actual aliens? Yes, deadly aliens?
Yes, it's called Robert
aliens
Haynes.
Aliens of death, and now you're taking your clothes off?
Now, wait a second. You had the perfect chance for the right quote, and you didn't use it.
Okay. Well, can I introduce Mary then instead of having an argument?
Your podcast?
I know. I'll get to that when we get to that in the episode.
And Mary, can you be quiet? It'll take half an hour to introduce the person who's got the least time, Mary Lynn.
Okay, I go to parties and I kiss people.
Oh, thank God for that. Well, tell me where your next party is then, Mary.
Will do.
Okay, right. Listeners may have noticed that there was no theme tune this week because the Dalek announcer is slightly distraught for the news that his creator has passed away.
Well, the physical.
And there's a strange noise coming from Robert.
It sounds like it
rather lowers the tone of our somber mood. Right. So, would anybody like to elaborate?
Well, this is where we would like to have listeners contribute to a new computer for Robert.
iMac, maybe.
Yes.
Just go past the eggs.
Grief, what on earth are you doing?
I can't hear you.
I'm doing nothing.
Reboot.
Good grief.
Is that any better?
Yes. Well, it is now.
Yes, it is.
Yeah. You're distant, but you're clearer.
Yeah. Anyway, to sum up, Ray Cusick has passed away. And all I want to say is obviously thank you, Ray, because if it weren't for your iconic design for the Daleks, it's quite likely we wouldn't be talking about, or we wouldn't have a podcast, really, would we? Let's face it.
Oh, yeah.
It's very likely.
So it's a complete, tragedy that he passes away this year of all years.
84.
Yeah. Of course, it's piling up. They're all dropping like flies at the moment, aren't they? I'm just a bit worried. I'm getting a bit concerned that we're going to lose a doctor this year. I don't want to tempt fate or anything, but you seem to be losing Doctor Who people left, right, and centre. Normally they come in threes, but they seem to be coming in hundreds at the moment.
Last 3 years.
And it seems to happen every time Gallifrey's on, too.
Does it?
That's right. It was 2 years ago we lost the brig.
Yeah.
And Elizabeth Sladen afterwards, yeah.
Yeah. But, we could have three or four podcasts to discuss what Ray Cusick means to the world of Doctor Who, and we're just going to pay tribute to him saying thank you, Ray.
Indeed.
Yes.
Meanwhile, we have a episode of Doctor Who to talk about. Obviously, we'll get onto news later on in the show because Mary.
It's sad now.
It is sad, isn't it? Well, you can't but not feel sad with news such as that coming through. Does slightly put a dampener on things, but we'll try and carry on because that's what Ray would have wanted. His show, technically, what it is, because his iconic design still survives to today, is still on. And. We're talking today about the 11th Hour. Now, it's very interesting watching the 11th Hour straight after having watched End of Time and see how one flows into the other.
Yes.
Yeah.
The only thing I noticed is that the Earth looked slightly different in its previous episode than it did when we see the little shot of the TARDIS sort of crashing or sort of flying.
A lot of things look different.
It was going through time. That's why we see the Millennium Stadium.
Okay. So, of course, we have to see the shot of him hanging out the TARDIS. Because initially it's flying through and the doors are shut, so he somehow managed to get himself thrown nearly out. And then we have the bit of the Big Ben nearly damaging his chances of having a little doctor.
Again. He's already been a father.
Yeah, well, not in this incarnation. So then we get the new titles. Now, I seem to remember at the time there was a bit of a split sort of decision on,
ooh,
on the new titles.
Painful.
What?
Sounds painful.
No, I'm just saying that people weren't quite sure whether they liked or didn't like the new titles. I liked them.
I didn't mind the titles. I didn't like the theme tune.
How do you think of the theme tune now when you listen to it? Because obviously it has changed since then, but what do you think of it now?
I've warmed to it. I've grown used to it. But I thought I was expecting so much more because I liked the one that we had before this at the time. And this was just kind of a huge change and I wasn't ready for it. But I've warmed to it.
Okay, so have I. I thought these things do happen.
I liked it right off.
Yeah.
Yeah, so did I.
I just thought it sounded like a Halloween episode or something.
Yeah. Meanwhile, we're outside a sort of house, which has only got two stories, which I'll relate to later on. Bearing in mind, we have actually reviewed this episode many months ago. Well, be quiet.
It's been in more than two stories.
All right, be quiet. And we got the little girl praying to Santa.
Aww.
For some reason. And then there's a sound outside of what we know to be a crashing TARDIS. And
of course, I like it when they meddle with the sound effect a little bit when she's in a dire situation. Instead of it just being the normal sound, they tweak it a little bit.
Yeah. So she says, "Thank you, Santa," because obviously I think she asked for a policeman, didn't she, during her prayer?
Yeah.
And of course, a police box turns up. I do like the fact that the subtle thing of her carrying a very 1980s style torch outside, which isn't shining particularly brightly, despite the fact we can see everything. And then we see that iconic shot of Matt Smith climbing out of the sort of sideways TARDIS.
Does anyone remember that we had a publicity photo of the TARDIS crashed like that for about 2 weeks before?
We did?
Yeah, yes. It was circulating from the BBC. It was a spoiler!
Oh, right. Don't tell Reese.
That's why I didn't see it. Like I'm sensible. Ice Warriors. Avoid those.
Like I say, don't tell Reese.
Get out.
Ice Warriors.
Get out.
Anyway, so...
You're ruthless.
Basically, the Doctor jumps out the TARDIS and puffs out some regeneration energy and has glowing hands and... I think
it's one of the few times that the TARDIS has doors that open outward.
Yes. Yeah. Yes. Well done.
And even though we saw them opening inward just before the credit.
Well, it crashed. You got that.
Well spotted. So the Doctor's a bit hungry. So he tries various foods that he thinks he's going to like, including apples. And he initially asks for apple, doesn't he? And then he nearly throws up. So he tries bacon, he tries baked beans, bread and butter.
Yogurt.
Evil.
And eventually we
said... I love his description of yogurt. It's just stuff with bits in.
It is. I hate yogurt.
Oh, I love it. Good for you, Kirby.
Eventually settles for fish fingers and custard. And
I love the smile he gives when he tips him out of the bowl and it's just on his lip like a moustache and he just smiles.
Mm-hmm.
Coconut cake and cheese sauce.
Thank you.
It was
that.
Fish fingers and custard, Kirby.
Yeah, okay.
Story, it was fish fingers and custard.
Yeah, okay, I'm not going to have an argument about what it was, but it was fish fingers and custard. What I'm trying to say is, he didn't actually eat fish fingers. Obviously, it was something else, wasn't it, Kirby?
Yeah.
Yes, it was coconut cake.
Which sounds delicious.
I only learned last night it was not real custard. It was a cheesy sauce.
What?
Yeah, that's what they
did. Cheese with coconut.
I know.
That
was very strange, but that came up in the commentary.
In commentary.
Yeah. I would have thought coconut would go better with ice cream myself, but
yeah, yeah. Me too.
There you go.
Well, that sounds more disgusting than fish fingers and custard.
Yeah, it does. I've done. I agree.
That's yummy.
That's what they. That's what they said. That's what they said. And Muff never lies.
Anyway, back to the story.
Well, kudos to Matt Smith for eating it then, if it was that. Yuck.
They had 12 or 13 takes.
Okay. Mm. Anyway, back to the story. Back to the story. Now, there's the little girl, Caitlin Blackwood. People were saying that she's good. I mean, she's not a trained actress, but she's really good. Yeah. What I'm saying is people were saying, oh, she's so much like Karen Gillan. But she's not really, is she? She's got an accent, no. She's got ginger hair. Other than that, she doesn't really look like her at all. But
it is her cousin.
Yeah, I know. Yeah. The cousin doesn't necessarily. My cousins look like Afro-Caribbean people, but they don't look anything like me, but they're still my cousins. So, anyway.
I thought her mannerisms were like her, and she spoke like Karen does when she's playing Amy.
Oh, yes. Yes. I can accept they picked a Scottish girl because it's her cousin, etc., etc. But I'm just saying, she didn't look like she was going to end up looking like Karen Gillan. But I don't mind. They never do that really well in dramas, so it's not a problem. I just wanted to say, people were saying at the time how close she looked like Karen Gillan, but she didn't for me. But I did like her.
She didn't look like her, but I thought she behaved a fair bit like her.
Yeah, I did really like her, I have to say. Of course, Then we see the crack in the bedroom wall. Now, this still has issue with me, this crack. Because the fact that the doctor can hear the prison from behind it...
has escaped.
Yeah. And and I like that. I do like him using the 10th Doctor's sonic screwdriver. I miss that screwdriver. But when it opens up and you see the bars and everything, and they never really explained why... You know, for after that, it was just for making things be wiped out from history from this moment onwards.
Yeah. Actually, in Vampires in Venice, the what were their name? The fish people, I'm going to call them. They say some of the cracks took people out of time, but they went through one to end up in Venice. So sometimes they go to places, and obviously in the 11th Hour, it went to the prison that Prisoner Zero was in, and in other times it just wipes people out of time.
Okay, so what you're saying, it's all to do with convenience of the plot.
Yeah, the multi-purpose crack, yeah. Uh-huh.
Yes.
Anyway, the
doctor... multi-purpose crack.
The doctor is just about to sort of explain everything.
It's a bit of stack filler.
And then we hear the cloister bell, which makes him run out and say he'll be back in 5 minutes. Now, before we have the cloister bell, there's a bit where... the doctor sort of notices that mysterious door that is or isn't there. And we have the staircase to the third part of the house.
Right.
Mm. Well, I've come up with a theory about this, for the fact that they never explain this staircase, and it's a two-story house. That would then make it a third story. And we see in one scene later on that it's flat. What it's going up to is flat. I reckon that is just a staircase to the attic. So there's just a flap that opens up.
When you look at the house, it's got a pretty tall roof. So, I just assumed it was the attic.
Yeah, and I think that's why we see a flap.
Why such an elaborate staircase?
Well,
it's a sizable attic.
This seems odd to me.
Well, I suppose it's easier than having just a ladder that drops down so you can climb.
Right.
But that was because the fact that they didn't actually explain it must mean it's not really crucial to the plot. As I was saying, they've already ended this part of the story, haven't they? If you think about it, with the fact they did come back to it at the end of the Angels.
Yeah, but Moffat never lies, does he?
Yeah.
Ask his wife. Anyway, so like I say, the doctor says he'll be back in 5 minutes, and little Amelia goes and packs, and I've got the little figure. I've got the figure from the Doctor Who experience of the little Amelia with a hat and coat and packed little bag.
Mm-hmm. I have to say that sequence with those two is just charming, I think.
Yeah,
it is. Yeah. So she goes and sits and waits, and then the next shot we see the TARDIS materialising with smoke and stuff, which is quite a clever materialisation.
Even in the commentary, Moffat refers to her as the girl who waited. And then, what, two years the before.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
So, like we say, he turns up and gets into the house and keeps talking to himself and then ends up getting clobbered over the head with a cricket bat. And the funny thing about that, and quite a clever bit of editing, I suppose, is the fact next thing we see an ambulance arriving at the hospital. Initially, when watching this, I thought the doctor was in that ambulance.
Right.
Yeah.
So did my mum. She laughed. Too. I thought, why are you laughing? And I thought, oh, right, it could be him.
Yeah.
And it was, I thought it would have taken a very different turn if it was him in there.
Like John Petrie, it's Spirit from Space.
Mm. There are similarities between this and Spirit from Space, very, you know, especially the bit where he nicks the clothes and stuff. And then we see Rory for the first time, everybody. And of course, at the time,
I'm excited.
We never thought that Rory would have such an impact on the series as he did. Sorry, Robert, didn't catch any of what you just said then. Carry on, say it again.
He just looked very young.
He did, actually.
He did.
Well, the doctor's hair looks strange, too, because it's not in its final. It's still regenerating.
Okay, thank you.
Yeah.
Anyway, so we have the doctor who's... Well, not the doctor, the doctor in the hospital doctor rather than... Oh, it's just going to get confusing, isn't it? who's a bit bolshy.
So there's doctor in the TARDIS and doctor in the hospital.
Yeah. Or should
he... is still wearing the 10th doctor's clothes, which strangely fit him.
Yeah. Well, he didn't... Well, size-wise, I don't think he's that much different to Tennant, is he? As a look at
he's not as tall. I would think those pants...
I'm just looking at my figures, because... The five inch figures that we collect, us Doctor Who fans, do have the correct sort of relationship heights to what they really
are.
They do, yeah. If you
so they're not 5 inch,
and you can
I'm sort 5 inch. Scaled down. Would you please listen? Scaled down. I think a 5 inch is just an average. If you listen to me, just for a second, I can explain. Right. For instance, we've got the Troughton figure standing next to the Pertwee figure, and the Troughton figure only comes up to the Pertwee figure's shoulders, which is accurate.
They have 4.5 inches.
Oh, for God's sake. Yes, more or less. But the Tennant figure...
Short.
The Tennant figure and the Smith figure are fairly much the same height.
Yeah, they
are they
really?
The
same.
Yeah. There you go. Definitive proof there.
Yeah.
By measuring... 5 inch
figure. Tennant just looks taller because he's got a very tight suit and the spiky hair, but and he's a bit thinner than Matt Smith.
Well, whilst we're talking,
I'm sure
that Kirby's going to be Wikipedia-ing their height. Meanwhile, I can go back to
a
foot size.
You don't? Oh my God! It's something that Kirby doesn't hear about.
Something you don't care about?
Oh my God!
Astounding!
I never thought this moment would come.
Dun dun dun!
Now you're going to have to, Kirby.
Anyway, back to this episode.
I was posting to Facebook a link to the video of the Harlem Shake that my oldest daughter was in over the weekend.
So you're not getting at all distracted then?
Yeah, I see we're keeping you fully engaged here, Kirby.
Yes. Anyway, right, back to the episode. Now, I was talking about the doctor in the hospital doctor, the actual doctor, medical doctor. Shall we call it EastEnders Doctor, eh, Mary?
Oh, sure. Definitely. That's Z from EastEnders.
Yes. And I do like it when she uses her normal English accent rather than the sort of Pakistani accent she uses. I know she depicts the Pakistani accent particularly accurately, but I prefer her normal natural speaking accent, not the one that she has in Doctor
Who. Yelling at the nurse accent.
Yeah. Anyway. Yeah. So... That we get the first appearance, and it was lovely to see her, wasn't it, of Amelia Pond Senior. Yes, it was a bit like that, wasn't it? But she didn't really need that police uniform to be attractive. And also, when we have the shot of the doctor's sort of eye view to a certain degree, looking up at her, we can see that sort of blocked off ceiling from at the top of the staircase, which does. Now I'm looking at it. Does. Be quiet. When I'm looking at it now, it does look like there's a door there that maybe you push up. Had a doo-doo noise come up. It's probably a message from somebody on Skype. But I'm going to ignore it. So you see Amy, who's... we don't know it's Amy yet. Well, we do. But the doctor doesn't know it's Amy yet. Who pretends to be an actual policewoman by calling on the radio to actual backup. Sorry, fake backup. We also see the fact that the comatose patients in the hospital are calling out the doctor. That was earlier on. We missed that bit because you were talking about stuff. They would go, doctor. Of course, that's why Rory was saying that they were calling for her, not the actual the right. doctor. Which is anybody right. confused yet?
Nope.
No, that's not.
Nope.
Only because you know what the story is.
I have seen this so many times.
Okay.
Uh-huh, me too.
Rory wants to show EastEnders doctor pictures on his phone that he's taken yeah. of stuff, but she's not interested.
Right. Won't even look at them.
No. Anyway, doesn't she just look lovely, Karen Gillan? A bit spotty around the eyes, but still very attractive. And of course, the doctor then sort of makes her see the room that has got a perception filter, very sort of
corner of
thing.
Your eye.
Yeah. And she goes in and finds a sonic screwdriver on a table, which is all gunked up. How did that screwdriver get in there? That always made me wonder. How
it
did
rolled
that
under the door.
But how did it go under the door and up onto the table?
Because Prisoner Zero had hold of it, yes.
Oh, you mean he had it? Yeah, because that's why it's all covered in gunk. So it's Prisoner Zero gunk. But it's funny that... Oh, never mind. I'm not going to worry too much about it now. the doctor's still handcuffed to the... To the radiator.
I love that line actually when she goes in there. Don't touch that door. Don't open that door. Don't go. Oh. Do I have a face that no one listens to again?
I have a face like that. Isn't that funny? Anyway, so there's also, at the time, I wasn't particularly impressed with the CGI sort of Prisoner Zero. But it's actually not too bad.
What's it hanging from?
The ceiling?
The ceiling.
Yeah.
That's what I always wonder.
Yes. I just assumed it was hanging from the ceiling.
Yeah,
I think so. Not sure, but I don't really mind. Then it changes, doesn't it? It changes into a man with a dog. After we see
that was well done.
After we see the Silverkin moment of where she flicks her hair out.
Apparently, the guy who plays the man with the dog was very good at imitating. Even though they put the dog in afterwards. He was hired because he was good at imitating dogs.
Oh, you know, he reminded me of Louis Spence, and only people in the United Kingdom might know what I'm talking about there. Very clever, very clever idea, this. I don't know if Ben would agree with me if he was on the show, but he's not on the show, so I'll just say
Kirby, you said they put the dog in later, so is that a CGI dog?
No. The sound of the dog.
The sound.
Oh, okay. Okay.
They hired him because he barked.
They changed that later.
Anyway.
And probably because he could open his mouth up particularly wide. Now, this moment when you see the teeth, that Isabella watched this with me, by the way. That freaked Isabella out. She said, "You said it wasn't scary." I said, "Well, I'm not scared."
it started the whole bit, the series. I almost said season. Oh my goodness! I need to wake up. weird teeth.
Yes.
It's a running theme throughout the entire series.
Yep. The doctor tries to get in the TARDIS, but can't because it won't let him in because it's rebuilding itself.
No! Don't regenerating. Do that.
And then he licks the shed to decipher the fact that he hasn't come back 5 minutes later.
They all have that moment of doing something disgusting and going bleh.
And the next bit is Amy. She runs off, grabs the doctor's hands, and runs off and leads the doctor. Now, in the last Christmas special called The Snowmen, Clara does that, and he says, "I do the leading, and I grab the hands and run off." And this has happened here, which is quite interesting.
I think I've forgotten something then.
Yes.
Unless it's I don't know.
She does. My goodness, I really hadn't noticed that.
And this is the point where we think that the house is going to be incinerated, right?
Yes.
The human residence or the human residence
and
will
also,
be incinerated.
There's an ice cream van, which, you know, I was watching the series and there's got to be some sort of significance with this ice cream van. There wasn't. was there?
Right, that he's got in there looks like
when I owned
in the 80s.
Well, it's supposed to be in the early 2000s, wasn't it?
Yeah, but it's not like the one I had in the 80s.
It can't have been, because... Oh, never mind.
Moffat says this is set in 96.
This episode, set in 96.
Yeah. Yes. No, wait. Hang on. It was 96 at the beginning.
Yeah.
Then it would have jumped forward to 2008 because they deal with the Atraxi. And then it jumped 2 years.
It goes around. It's 12 years later, right.
Yeah. Confused, you will
be. 12 years and four psychiatrists later.
Yes, I understand. You're correct.
Okay.
I'm still waking up.
Yeah.
Anyway, fair enough.
But it's interesting, obviously, that
morning,
she...
Good morning, Kirby.
Good morning.
Annette Crosby's got one of those old-fashioned cathode ray tellies, which indicates that this is a little bit further back in the past.
Some of us still have those.
Okay. They're novel, aren't they?
I've got a couple of them left.
And then we're saying that... Annette Crosby then recognises the Doctor from the description that Amy's given her. Now, is she some relative of Amy? They don't really establish this.
Well, she's friends with Jeff, and I'm thinking in a kissogram sort of way, and that's Jeff's gran.
Right.
So I think she's just a friend of the family.
So she recognises the Doctor as the Raggedy Doctor.
It's a small village. Everyone knows everyone.
Well, Amy tries to amusingly, first of all, explain the fact she's come in with a police girl's uniform and all the other uniforms.
She hid behind the furniture, hiding it from her.
Yeah, and she goes through all the things that she keeps on turning, all the customs she keeps on turning.
Yeah, that's a great list. It's a great list. Okay, I go to parties and I kiss people.
I finally understand. I always wondered, had she just come off of a job or something? From the InVision commentary, she changed after she hit him with the cricket bat into what she thought would be an authority figure, because she was confused that here this guy has come back, and she's going, am I crazy or what?
Yeah, yeah. Makes sense. And I haven't really thought of that one, actually.
But she acts like she doesn't know who he is. She just keeps referring to him as a stranger in the house. She doesn't she doesn't act as if she recognizes him in any way.
Yeah.
She was thinking she was really going crazy.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, I mean, I hadn't really considered that, but it's a good point. Then we see, what was the name of the chap that lives in the house with Annette Crosby?
Yeah.
Jeff, that's it, yeah. Who obviously is Percival. He's Percival in Merlin.
Yeah.
Now, I get the feeling, it's something very strange about this Chekhov's character, because he sort of looks to the Doctor as if he quite fancies him. And then we find out that...
he was looking at the Doctor the same way the Doctor was looking at him, with wide eyes, just going, ooh.
Yeah.
Because he says later on, you should delete your internet history, which is quite funny.
Yes.
We also see
a
space shot of the millions of Atraxi ships in sort of...
Yeah, hanging in the air, exactly the way Bridgestone. Right.
Yeah, which... Yeah. And that is certainly a blink-and-you'll-miss-it situation, I think, with those Atraxi ships. And I'll tell you what I did notice from this episode. How immediate the chemistry between Matt Smith and Karen Gillan is. Now, this is this isn't the first one they filmed.
Yeah.
But you wouldn't know that they filmed...
That would be harder to do, not filming the first episode first, because you have to try and make, later on in the Time of Angels, they would have had to try and make the chemistry seem like they've known each other for a while. And then in this one, they try and act a bit alien to each other, pardon the pun, seeing as the Doctor's not human.
Davison.
I know, I'm just saying it would be hard to do that as an actor.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
But anyway, back to the episode.
What's Doomsday?
Same to you. the Atraxi have blotted out the sun because they're planning to incinerate the planet. And you have that brilliant bit of everybody taking pictures of it with their mobile phones. And of course, the Doctor then.
Except for Rory.
Sort of. Yeah, he's taking a picture of everybody else, yeah.
Somewhere that Moffat has promised that we will find out why the duck pond doesn't have duck.
Oh.
Will we? How fascinating.
Did he get him?
He said that recently?
Visiting old things?
Yeah.
Oh, well, we have got the 50th anniversary coming up, and maybe it'll be a little mention.
I get the house
mention.
Explained.
But does it really matter? No. But then we have that thing with the photographs. They obviously said in the confidential how they did it, with some photographer going around taking pictures.
And they did that very Sherlock-like. I don't think we've seen that since then.
But this was in Doctor Who before Sherlock, wasn't it?
It was.
Yeah.
Right. But this is the only episode in which they use the Doctor in that way, where he uses his memory to, you know, look around and then having seen it in Sherlock and thinking, okay, you know, same director.
They
same
found the style right there.
Yeah.
But I like that shot.
He hits himself in the face to remember that. What did I do? What did I do?
He does that, though, doesn't he? Quite a lot. Then Amy traps his tie in the door and just...
Oh, yeah.
And Arthur Cox's... car door.
Yeah, Arthur Cox from the Dominators, wasn't it?
That's correct. And that now
Amy,
that,
I am going to take my keys.
Wikipedia has a comment about this, which confuses me because a few weeks ago
he's waking up.
I don't remember what character it was, but the Wikipedia entry said whoever it was we were talking about that week was the record holder for the longest gap between appearances on the series. And it also says Arthur Cox has the longest gap between appearances on the series. In this case, 42 years.
Okay.
42.
Thank you for that.
It's the answer.
Well,
what's the question?
Ultimate question.
Yeah, the ultimate question.
Universe and everything.
Right. Anyway, we see a shot where, because the Doctor gives Amy the apple that her mother when she was a child had cut the face on, and with that they slow the footage down and then they put they keep in the lens flare that happened to happen at that point,
which was quite a beautiful little thing.
It was,
yeah,
and apparently very lucky.
That's I mean the scene was too
which made me wonder if the mother cut that face when she was a child, that apple would be all withered.
No, I think she cut the face in it and she said, my mother used to do this for me. I think she was doing it for him to try and help him like apples.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
Because she didn't like apples, so her mother did that to help her like apples, and she's doing it for him.
Okay, right. I can accept that.
Can we just go back to these figures and the heights business, and you said about the suits fitting.
All right, yeah.
David Tennant is 5 foot, sorry, 6 foot one.
Can you call me pedantic?
Yeah.
And Matt Smith is 5 foot 11 and a half. So yes, the suits would fit Matt Smith, wouldn't they? But be slightly baggy on him.
Yeah, a little baggy in the legs.
And not necessarily, because some people's legs are shorter than others. So his legs may be longer, but his body shorter.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, that's true.
Yeah,
too.
Look at Karen Gillan. She's got the longest.
Yeah, I wouldn't mind looking at Karen Gillan.
I do.
Anyway, then we come to the death scene of the 10th and 9th Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver.
Aww.
Which is very reminiscent. Very, very reminiscent of Visitation when we see the death scene of the 5th Doctor's Sonic Screwdriver. But of course.
And it burns Matt Smith's head.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it doesn't.
You mean, no, it doesn't.
He drops it because it gets too hot.
No.
He said it did.
Right, there's only one way to settle this. Fight!
Contact Matt Smith. Matt, did it burn your hand when it went off? Yes, it did.
Anyway, right. The Prisoner Zero, meanwhile, has sunk down a drain and now is appearing in the hospital. Now, this effect did look terrible when it come through the sort of air vent.
I liked it when it disappeared.
It disappeared, looked good. Even Isabella said that looked good. But when it came out for the air vent, it sort of looked terrible. There you go. So, the Doctor gets to look at all Rory's photos. And unlike Jeff, they're quite clean. Because obviously he turns up at Jeff's and tells him about, they say. And then we see that the cameo from the recently late Patrick Moore.
Yeah.
Yes, which is the lady fancies, apparently.
Well, Annette Crosby.
Yes.
I think she's a bit young for him, not being funny, but he was in his mid-80s. She's probably in her early 70s. Mm.
Who are your lady friends? Patrick, behave.
she was about 75 at the time.
Okay, that's all right then. I stand corrected. Anyway, so yeah.
76-ish. Okay, she's 79 now anyway.
Okay. Anyway, the Doctor is meanwhile writing a computer virus via the mobile phone he has.
In one of my favourite scenes ever, just because of the music, which is part of I'm the Doctor, and I was going, yes, oh, yes, we're hearing it again.
They call it the Sun Goes Wibbly Wobbly. Yeah.
No, Sun goes wibbly.
Oh, the guy on the computer screen with the above Patrick Moore is the director's
Adam Smith, brother Adam,
brother
Adam
or something like that. He's a relative of the director.
His brother.
Yeah. And the guy on the bottom left, or maybe top left, has a big nose like Arthur Darvill. They zoom in on it.
Meanwhile, the only way Amy can turn back into a policewoman is by tying her hair back. The doctor has commandeered a fire engine with its ladder out. It's a bit dangerous.
Another of those things that we thought was going to be explained is that all of the equipment in the hospital and the laptop is branded Myth.
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
And yet we never found out. It still hasn't been explained.
It hasn't. Well done. Yeah, it was just a myth, yeah. Then we have a scene that really freaked Isabella out, the scene where the woman and the two girls.
Oh, yeah.
That was
very creepy. I got it wrong again.
Yeah, it was clever.
Yeah, uh-huh.
And the girls, are they sisters? Because they do look very much alike.
Yeah, they are sisters.
Yeah, it's very scary, actually, that particular. I can understand as a bit getting freaked out.
Aaron Montier.
Thank you. So, yeah, there's a bit where, of course, the doctor says duck as the ladder comes through the window.
Quack, quack. My infamous duck.
Yeah.
Oh, really? Duck now.
And this, of course, is when the time goes to 0000. It's quite interesting because there's. Prisoner Zero then turns up as himself and then changes into the Doctor.
Zero times.
Something like that. Doesn't it turn into the Doctor? And that's when he says, who's that? And they said, it's you.
How did you know? Busy day.
Do I look like that? Yeah.
But before that, we have the Who the Man bit.
That's yes. Right.
www.whoisamanpodcast.com. Thank you very much.
All right, I'm going to see if I can dub that over. Because I'm quite a clever podcasting person, so see if I can do it. There we go.
And thank you for Stephanie Ashbrook thing, too. Who the man?
There you go, Reese. You'll only hear that when you actually hear the podcast.
Okay. I wonder why.
And then little Amelia shows up with him.
Yes. Mm. Yes. This gives her a little bit more to do in the episode, doesn't it, really?
Mm-hmm.
Now, the actress that plays the woman in that scene is usually a comedy actress, which is quite interesting because Karen Gillan was a comedy actress before
Coleman.
She was in Doctor Who. Yeah, Olivia Colman, yeah.
And she's appearing with David Tennant and Arthur Darvill in that new detective show.
She is indeed. Now, this scene where, like somebody said about the little Amelia appears because the Doctor's there standing looking at the Doctor. Now, her expression, her facial expression in that scene is brilliant. It just looks so sinister.
Mm-hmm. And the intonation in her voice, too. Yeah. She sounded like she was disappointed in him.
Yeah. That's really, really good stuff. Mm. Yeah, of course, Amy's collapsed at this point because that's how the Doctor and her younger self are generated from her own memories. So
from her dreams.
The Doctor sort of gets in there somehow.
We've seen the ceiling of this hospital, and there's nothing there for Prisoner
Sticky.
Zero to hang. Okay,
it's a slug. It's like a slug. It sticks to the ceiling and hangs
down. It doesn't matter. Now, the scene... It doesn't. Anyway, the scene where the Doctor...
It worries me as well.
It what? It worries you.
I don't care.
The scene where the Doctor and the Amelia sort of turn back into Prisoner Zero and they all glow and that looks really cool. They're all glowy.
Plus regeneration energy.
Yeah, I suppose it is. Well, it certainly looks like it. Anyway, this is the point when the Doctor decides it's about time he got some clothes. So he goes running for the hospital.
That's my line that I opened up with. You just summoned aliens back to Earth. Actual aliens. Deadly aliens.
I do agree, though, that...
Death.
And you're taking your clothes off.
Yeah, yes. But I agree with Kirby that you should have used the Who the Man one.
I don't
care. You don't like it being predictable, do you?
No.
And I like while he's stripped down, Rory turns his back on him and says to Kieran, you know, aren't you going to turn away?
Yeah.
And she very determinedly says no.
And the expression on her face is quite funny as well.
Yeah. Mm.
There are a few moments where her eyes went pretty wide too.
Yeah. And the entire rooftop scene, I've been known, sorry, my microphone dropped there. I've been known to go back and watch just the rooftop scene.
All over.
Have you been known to do that? Have you? Is that on that watchtherooftopscene.com by any chance?
It's
legend.
Yeah, I tell you, obviously, I have my favourite part of it, and that's obviously the bit where he shows the images from his mind of things he's fought. Although, well, it says about Earth, doesn't he? We see the Ood, and the Ood were never really attacking Earth, as far as I know. But there you go, doesn't matter, I suppose. And nor were the Hath, for that matter. Sorry?
Yeah. What? But you just brought it up. There's a couple other things in there which were never honored.
I was going to say that Ood could be justified. I was going to say that Ood could be justified because in the future, maybe the Atraxi time travel, they were the slaves of the great and bountiful human empire at some point.
Okay.
In the Planet of the Ood, we knew that.
In Planet of the Ood, yeah, they got pretty threatening there.
They do, I suppose. But not necessary to Earth at that point. Or, says, we haven't seen it yet. Yeah, of course, then we see the thing of beauty that it is of all the faces of the doctors.
And, and some of the other things, some of the other monsters we see, it's pretty cool because we see classic series. Yeah.
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 But it's a thing of beauty when you see Tennant's face.
And the Santarin is a classic one, not a modern one.
Yep.
It's a thing of beauty when you see Tennant's face.
When you
face,
see Tennant's face and then Smith just walks through it. And it just looks superb.
I'm the doctor. Basically, run.
Run, yeah.
Right.
Now, that shot of Tennant, I don't remember seeing that particular shot of him.
It was in The Runaway Bride.
What, that was it?
I think he looks down at the... What was the creature's name? This big spider.
Arachnos.
That's the one. He looks down at it and there's fire behind it. I think that's where it's taken from.
Oh, okay. So there you go. And the doctor walks through with his new sort of
bow tie. And I like the way you can see him in the background tying it up.
Yeah. And then the key starts glowing in his hand. And he runs back to the TARDIS, gets all excited, and says, I think calls it sexy, doesn't he?
Yes.
What was that? Oh, I can hear myself. Ooh. Hello, me. Oh, no,
hello.
Can't.
Well,
that's me letting a cat in.
What?
Meow!
Anyway, yeah, so I'm pretty sure he calls the new TARDIS sexy, and then, of course, he goes for a quick spin on it, which turns out to be a 2-year spin.
Yes.
And this is where we see the little Amelia still waiting for the doctor in the morning and the sound of the TARDIS, don't we?
Mm. Yeah.
Yes, which they then...
know that's from the last episode with the ponds in.
Which he had to really go back and explain at some point, didn't he? I'm glad he did. Not much, but he did explain. There was enough there to explain it. Although, then she would have had another memory of the Doctor, or being with the Doctor, between then and the first time we see her as an adult.
It's like the end of time Rose seeing the 10th Doctor and not remembering him.
A little bit, yeah.
He was in shadow!
We forgot to mention back in the hospital when the woman and the two girls were standing there. Before they go, they make all those predictions about...
Pandora will open the silence.
Oh, yeah, we did. I'm sorry, I did forget that, yes. But yes, the silence of four, obviously, it relates to the silence, and Pandora will open... And will open
or does end. It?
Eh? Oh! Yeah. Or it's the silence says, not the silence, Prisoner Zero says it's in its own voice. Silence will fall.
Yes, yes.
You know, Amelia, it's a good thing that Amelia sitting there on her suitcase is in the winter because she's awfully close to those beehives.
God. Anyway, like we're saying, the TARDIS then materialises, and they do it in a clever way because obviously we see little Amelia looking up with the sound of the TARDIS, and then the next shot is still the sound of the TARDIS, but it's materialising when you know, a couple of years later when Amy's obviously we find that just a couple of years later, and it also find out by the end title sequence, and it's just before her wedding as well. Go on, yeah.
And it's a nice newly painted TARDIS back with the St. John's ambulance.
Yes, indeed. Yeah. Which like, I happen to be wearing my TARDIS dressing gown.
Oh.
And that logo is actually on the dressing gown that I have.
Oh, nice.
Now, basically,
did it materialize you when you put it on?
Robert, no.
Is it bigger? Even
magic, growled when heard that.
It has to be.
Thank you very much.
One of my most favorite scenes of all with Karen Gillan is when she first enters that TARDIS.
Yeah, that sort of expression of wonder on her face. Yeah.
Is just amazing. I love it.
And she doesn't say it's bigger on the inside than the outside. She says, I'm in my nightie.
Yeah. Yeah, but did anybody watch it with the extra scene? Because there's an option to watch it with the extra scene.
What is the extra scene?
Meanwhile, back in the TARDIS.
Yes, it's basically the continuation of what you see here.
It shows us how she ends up hanging outside of the TARDIS.
Yeah. Yeah.
Being held on.
Which is her app.
The doctor's holding on to her foot.
In the Beast
in the
below.
Mm.
Oh, okay.
And also, we see the sort of the crack appearing on the monitor in the TARDIS as well in the background.
Oh, yes. And he turns it off.
Hinting.
It's like the pregnancy thing, isn't it, later on?
Mm.
Yeah, I suppose it is, actually, yeah. Wonder where he got
and
that idea from.
Death, even after that.
Yeah.
I love that TARDIS still. I just went, it's beautiful as soon as we saw it again.
It is. I also love the...
There was a nice flourish in the music when we saw it. It kind of went, da-da, look at that. And I just went,
That was also something they that Reese can be angry about. They released pictures of the interior of the TARDIS about a day before the episode broadcast.
But I'm sensible. Yeah. I don't go and look for those things.
Yeah, very good.
Warrior.
The other thing, the other thing I liked is when.
No way.
Be quiet.
No way.
Be quiet. The thing where the camera pans across all the toys and the little figures of the Doctor and Amelia, and the drawings and everything, and then it comes to the wedding dress.
Yeah. And I did notice that all the figures of the Doctor are in David Tennant's clothes.
Yes.
Which I thought was really cool.
The Raggedy Doctor.
Yeah.
And that basically is that. I'm going to ask Mary, because Mary's got another 6 minutes to talk about it for a bit.
Well, I love this episode, and I take to heart Kirby's suggestion that if you're going to recommend any new person to Doctor Who, that this would be the episode to do it. And I absolutely agree after watching it again, because I don't think I stopped grinning from the time it started until it ended. It's just delightful. It is so well directed, and the characters are so interesting that I'm totally engaged from the time it starts until it's done. So I have no complaints. The only thing that I would throw out would be I reacted the same this time as I have the last two times I've seen it, in that this whole Prisoner Zero thing, I have no idea where that's going or what that's even about, but it's like I immediately forget about all of that because I'm so caught up in the Doctor and Amy and all the other events.
Totally agree.
Me too, yeah.
All right, this will be interesting if we can hear him properly. Robert.
Hello.
I can hear you.
Hello.
You can hear me.
How is it in the future?
You should ask Reese. He's more in the future than I am.
It's scary.
Never mind.
It's hot.
Still hot.
Just answer the question.
I enjoyed it too, and 42. I love the music throughout. It is a good introduction, I guess, for people who don't know what the show's about. But
It's a good introduction, but it's a brilliant way. It's one of the best ways that the show does that amazing thing of being the incredible show that it is, but changing and having a new writer and a new doctor and a new companion and all the new things we got a new theme, a new title sequence, a new TARDIS, all the new things, and it was still incredible. And there are some brilliant lines, and like I said, the scenes with young Amelia and the Doctor were charming, and I just loved the line, "Oh, look at that, I was all the way down in the library. It was a hell of a climb back up." Why are you all wet? I was in a swimming pool. You said you're in the library, so it was a swimming pool.
Yeah.
And it was just lots of lines like that were just brilliant.
Yeah, and, I agree.
Yeah.
I just find it charming, wonderful, and I can watch it over and over again because it's one of the best episodes of Doctor Who I've ever seen.
I agree.
In this case, I did not even really watch it over again because I've seen it so many times. I watched the Confidential, and then I watched the InVision commentary.
I forgot to watch the Confidential.
I did too.
As I've said before, I just love this particular episode.
Well, I don't really need to say much because I kept on saying I agree with you because everybody knows then how I feel about it. I guess
only criticism for it this time round is nothing to do with the episode itself, but it sets up the Pandorica and it sets up a lot of questions, and because we've seen the answers to those questions, they don't have such a big mystery to them anymore. But that's nothing to do with the episode, it's to do with the whole season, so I could put that aside and still adore the episode.
Series.
Be quiet.
The Curse of the Fatal Death.
This and Christmas Carol are two of my absolute favorites.
You wouldn't believe it aside for an hour because it goes along briskly.
Yeah.
So there you go. That was rather brief summarising of...
It was an hour long. The conversation had been going for an hour long.
Well, 53 minutes, Reese.
That's brief for us.
Yes, it is.
Well, the Skype conversation. I don't know about the recording.
Was that all right for you, Mary? I consider you a bit worried.
Yeah, that was wonderful. Well, I find sometimes when I listen to the podcast, I start to buzz out about halfway through because we get so lost in details while we're trying to talk about the episode that I lose interest.
Oh, thank you very much.
I'm sorry.
Oh. What's this we? I think you're talking about Kirby. He gets lost in details.
We have to listen to it. Yeah, and I enjoyed the fact that the TARDIS key, when the TARDIS was finished, you know, regenerating or revamping, that the key glowed in his hand.
Here's
the mail. Magic.
God, I'll tell you what, right, this dog and the other one, I've got the heater on in here because it's absolutely freezing cold, and Star was leant up against the table that contains my microphone, and it was wobbling like mad, so I moved her, and I sort of moved her out of the way, and as soon as I moved her out of the way, Magic jumped in exactly the same spot and did exactly the same thing. So, and then when the door went, he jumped up and knocked it anyway. So, fortunately, I've got Alicia's computer up on the table because, as I say, I've tidied up this room. It looks superb in here, more a sort of a place you would record a podcast. And now he's coming back to knock the table again. God's sake! Will you sit down? Sit.
We are.
I am.
We are.
Right.
And also about the TARDIS, it was also fun to see him snap his fingers and have the door open.
Yes, good point. Yes, I've forgotten about that. Thank you for mentioning it. Yes.
I like that scene. There was a line about, Amy says, and you kept the bow tie, and he said, yeah, big flying spaceships in the end of the world. I saved the day. Shoot me. I kept the bow tie.
Yeah. And one of my favorite lines of his is, you know, in all of time and space, you know, anywhere you want to go. Yeah.
That's how I sum up Doctor Who. All of time and space, every star, every planet, where do you want to start?
Right.
Superb. Yeah. Right.
Lots of good lines.
Indeed. That's probably where we say goodbye to Mary just before we do the feedback section of the show. Of course, all the feedback is about Mary, but it's a bit of a shame. I mean, you're joking, it's not really...
Good timing. Oh, yeah, I know. Get her off the show.
Can you stay for a bit longer, then?
Can I what?
Can you stay for a bit longer, then?
Maybe 5 minutes.
Okay, we'll see how much I can do of this. So I forgot to put the dog's dinner on, actually. Oh. Right, I just quickly put the dog's dinner on. I've got Deb in the other room ill. She's got flu. But I'm sure she'd rather she laid down and I did the dog's dinner than the other way around. So I'm just going to go and do the dog's dinner.
Okay, well then I'll take this opportunity to say goodbye to you all. I really should leave.
Goodbye.
Monday. And we probably should talk about if time change happens week after next, when should we be recording again? And I'll let you guys decide that, and I'll listen to the podcast to find out.
Mm-hmm.
As long as you don't zone out, we listen to it.
I'm sorry, what, Kirby?
Probably on Sundays, because otherwise it'll you wouldn't be able to be on at all.
Right.
I could only be on for an hour for the same reason.
Yes. So America drops out of the podcast pretty much. Well, what I'm wondering is, to be fair to the Aussies, if we should do another Monday, because then the next few ones will have to be Sundays. What do you think?
Yeah, I would think so.
Okay. Well, bring that up when Adam and you all talk about it.
Just a bit of a hint. A bit of a hint. You're pronouncing Aussie. Think of Ozzy Osbourne. It is pronounced like that.
Well, I didn't say. I'm sorry if it came across as Aussie. I meant Aussie is what I was thinking.
Oh, no, it is actually Aussie. It's not Aussie.
Oh, is it? Oh, okay. Okay. Oh, so you're correcting my pronunciation. Okay.
Yes.
I thought you were okay, Mary. It's just Reese got a problem with it.
I do. Whenever I'm talking about
Reese and Kirby have a lot in common. They both zoom in on the particulars, don't they?
Separate your
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't get wound up if somebody said the curse of the fatal death, but someone does.
see, so they're the two that are always arguing with each other.
I'll explain later.
Okay, all right. Well, say goodbye for now. Bye-bye.
Okay,
bye. Bye, Mary.
Bye, Mary. No, I think I missed something there.
Yeah.
You missed what?
I don't know, Mary going. Nearly. Okay, so that means the next bit of or message I got was from Mr. Thomas Reyes.
Ooh.
And he says...
Has he got that many S's on the end?
Be quiet.
He's an ice warrior.
Didn't take you long to interrupt it, though, did it? He says, nice. To be completely honest, Matt Smith's scene in The End of Time didn't leave me with a good impression. Perhaps I was feeling sore that Tennant was gone, or maybe I felt the scene was too much like the 9th/10th Doctor's regeneration, only not as good. Whatever the case, my impression of him changed completely with the 11th Hour. Smith was brilliant. From the script to the production design, everything was top-notch. With this episode, I remember being filled with newly restored hope and eagerness to see where the show was going to go during Moffat's reign. P.S. Your last episode had me in stitches. Thank you. Oh dear, has he injured himself?
Oh, sorry. What did we do to you?
We're sorry.
Oh dear. I hope it wasn't too disastrous. And I think we do have a disclaimer that prevents us from getting sued for anybody getting injured, apart from obviously thinking of Dr. Phil and him crashing his car twice during the listening or doing providing feedback.
I noticed
for the show.
That he didn't crash his car the last week.
Well, obviously, he's heeded my warnings. Thank you, Thomas, and I hope you get better soon. What else we got here? Oh, audio feedback. I wonder if this is going to work.
Ooh. Hi, me.
Hello, 20 Megabyte Podcast. This is Inkirk.
Yay.
I'm still not that impressed by The End of Time.
Are you not?
But I'm not going to flog a dead horse. I'm a frozen food company.
That's my job to put the... I mean,
well, that is it for our coverage of 4 years of the David Tennant era. This music should please Rhys Parton. Because it is called The Four Seasons.
Ooh. Very nice it is too.
A goat. Something like that. 11th Hour by Stephen Moffat. There are 6 rooms on the upstairs floor of Amy's house, not 5.
No.
The thing is, as pointed out in the later episode, that is a lot of rooms on one floor.
It is.
There are probably a dozen rooms in the house altogether. There is one stair going down, and one stair going nowhere. If I were a rich man...
I'd build a big tall house with the rooms by the dozen right in the middle of the town. A fine tin roof with a real wooden floors below. There would be one long staircase just going up, and one even longer coming down, and one more leading nowhere just for show.
This is Karen Gillan's first episode. The hospital, St. Kedoc's, Newport, used in this, is also used in The Power of Three, which was the last one she filmed.
Oh, right.
Little Amelia looks up as if she hears the TARDIS returning for her. It seems that Stephen Moffat is saying reality is more complicated than we perceive. And the Doctor both did and did not return for young Amelia.
Yes.
Like quantum mechanics. A quantum mechanic is someone who repairs TARDISes. If you go back in time and kill Hitler, then is there a timeline where his victims are dead and another one where they are alive?
Quite possibly.
What about any crimes committed in the second timeline by people who are dead in the first? It might seem you've created more suffering, not less. Alternatively, it appears you have killed an innocent man, because he never will be a criminal. I like whole numbers. Decimals are alright, but I don't like irrational or imaginary numbers. Is this Doctor number 11? Or is he 7.7 recurring times the square root of 2?
What?
Would it spoil some vast eternal plan? I were a wealthy man.
Bye for now.
Right, Ian.
Now, when Ian posted his script yesterday,
I saw that.
I immediately pounced on his Karen Gillan's first episode.
He did correct it
as a companion. Is what he meant.
Yes.
I've got some more audio feedback here from somebody called Matthew Crissell.
This is Matthew from North Alabama sending in feedback on the Series 5 premiere episode, The 11th Hour, as well as some belated feedback on The End of Time. Having heard episode 152, I want to very quickly give my thoughts on The End of Time, since I wasn't able to send in feedback on it in time for the last episode. The End of Time is one of my most watched New Who stories, and it's a favorite of mine, despite some sizable flaws in it, such as the incoherent plotting that Dr. Phil mentioned in his feedback. Right. Oddly, things that bug other people, like the use of magic and inverted commas to bring back the Master, doesn't really bug me. That's a case where I merely remember Arthur C. Clarke's rule that any high enough form of technology is indistinguishable from magic, and not the one that flaps its ears a lot either. It has some really strong moments as well, backed up by some strong performances, especially from Tennant and Cribbins, and I, for one, was happy to see Welsh actor and former 007 Timothy Dalton as Rassilon. For yes, it was Rassilon, and the story actually confirmed a lot of what we've seen and heard in the spin-off media, especially the Big Finish audios, about Rassilon being a tyrant. I do have to say, though, I am a bit perturbed at you guys that all you could say about him across nearly 3 hours was about the amount of spittle he produced, but I digress.
Also, I said it was brilliant.
Given that there was over a year's worth of build-up to Tennant's departure, I don't think anything could have lived up to the hype that built around End of Time by the time it was broadcast. In the end, though, for all of its successes and failures, I think that The End of Time sums up and brings a suitable end to the Russell T. Davies era of New Who. Or, as Ud Sigma put it, the song is ending, but the story never ends. Indeed, the story continues in The 11th Hour. Right from the opening shots, we see the reinvention of Doctor Who all over again, as a new production team and cast stretch their legs and eat fish fingers and custard in the process. For all the concerns and worries that people had about Matt Smith, and I indeed did have concerns, he very quickly fills the Doctor's shoes, and the scene on the rooftop towards the end where he walks through the image of other Doctors in his new costume and says, "Hello, I'm the Doctor," was the moment Smith became the Doctor for me, and had me incredibly excited about where the series would go from there. There's also the introduction of new companions in the form of Amy Pond, played by the wonderful and, I must admit, incredibly attractive Karen Gillan, as well as her future husband Rory, played by Arthur Darvill. With their exit still fresh in our minds, it's fascinating to go back and watch their debut here and see just how far those characters, and those portraying them for that matter, were to go by the time they reached Angels in Manhattan. We also get to meet Amy's younger self, played by the adorable Caitlin Blackwood, who incidentally will be the guest of honor at ConQuestervice 2013, taking place at the Holiday Inn next to Madison Square Mall in Huntsville, Alabama, June 8th and 9th, tickets for which can be bought at ConQuestervice.com.
Nice plug.
The icing on the cake, though, is Moffat's script that echoes Who stories of the past, especially Spearhead from Space and other alien invasion stories, while also looking forward with a new doctor and a story that's just a tad bit timey-wimey. In the final analysis, then, The 11th Hour is one of the best Doctor debut stories, and nearly 3 years later, the story is still yet to end. What more can you ask for? Best wishes to everyone at the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast from Matthew Kressel.
Thank you, Matthew.
Thank you, Matthew.
Yeah, thanks, Matthew.
In regards to the Timothy Dalton thing, I've got two things to talk about that. I did say he was brilliant. It does confirm that James Bond is a Time Lord.
Yes.
Well, of course he is.
But it's interesting to note, isn't it? In 50 years of James Bond, there's only been, what, 7 of them? Or something like that? It's been about half.
A bit more careful with his lives.
Yes. Well, no, he hasn't, though, has he? He's been shot at so many times, but never sort of really.
He's better at avoiding the bullets, then.
Maybe so. But, yes, all good fun. Well, that sort of sums up the situation regarding feedback. Right, we've got news as well. You must remind me, I've got to do a plug, and this plug will be repeated over and over again, so I do apologise. I might have to record some sort of audio. What does that mean?
Six actors.
Pardon?
Six actors, they say fine. Sean Connery, George Lazenby, Roger Moore, Timothy Dalton, Pierce Brosnan, Daniel Craig.
Plus the various stunt guys.
Dear me. Well, I'm so disappointed.
Unless you want to count David Niven.
Well, he does count, really, doesn't he?
The first Casino Royale.
Yeah, all right. Thank you.
All right. 1960-something, was it?
Yes.
Hello and welcome to the 20 Megabyte to James Bond podcast.
Right. Now
well,
there's... okay, I will. Right, so, like I say, what's happened in the last week? We've got the TARDIS speaker system is being launched by Who Sounds. And there's a dog barking. Cool. That's not going to make my wife particularly happy. Don't know what he's barking at. He's barking for the sake of it.
Postman.
No, Postman's long gone.
Postman.
Postwoman, in fact. So TARDIS speaker system.
Light flashes blue when paired with the Bluetooth device.
Yeah. Sounds like fun. If you've got the money. The Visitation Special Edition is coming out yet again.
Is that coming out?
Why is it, or when is it? 6th of May is the date it's coming out. Does that answer your question?
Huh?
6th of May.
Somebody.
Region
2
and Region 1. And April the 24th. Be quiet.
Mind you.
For Region 4.
The Ark of Space Special Edition is going to be here this week, Adam.
Don't you mean the Ark in Space?
Yeah, the Ark in Space. What did I say? Ark of Space.
You did, yeah. Lots of good special features, though, on the Visitation Special Edition. I should hope so, too, if you've got to buy it again.
Yes.
Adventures in Time and Space does a cast David Annen as Peter.
Space and Time.
Yeah, that's what I said. Adventure in Space and Time.
No, you did.
I'll be quiet. Peter Brakaki is to be played
by. He's the original TARDIS designer interior.
Yeah, no, but played by David Annen or Annen. I've seen some of the pictures and footage that's surfacing for the behind the scenes stuff. Is amazing. Do you see the Mark Gatiss one? On the bridge in London with the Daleks.
Yeah, we talked about that last week.
No, you talked about it last week. I hadn't seen it, but it's really good. All right.
Hey, Reese.
Yeah.
Reese.
Yes.
Don't read Doctor Who news.
I don't.
It mentions Ice Warriors return in the spring.
it mentions a spoiler that should never have been released. It seems to be shamed.
Anyway,
adjusting my
Nicholas Briggs, a surprise, going to be doing the Dalek voices indeed. They've cast Jackie Lane, so obviously they're carrying on this story through to the Troughton era, which I'm delighted to know now. Sophie Holt is to play Jackie Lane, aka Dodo. What else we got here? Obviously, Raymond Cusick passed away 1928 to 2013. And then we have some shots from like from the animation of 10th Planet episode 4. Oh, I can't wait to see it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. Then that's about it, isn't it? That says Al Jazeera buys Doctor Who. Al Jazeera has bought series 5-7 of Doctor Who. The episodes were snapped up at the BBC Worldwide Showcase in 2013 and will be shown on the satellite TV broadcast as Pan Arabic Children's Channel JCC. And that really sums up the news.
The loss of Richard Bryars as well.
Did we not mention that last week?
We mentioned it last week.
Did we not?
He died after the show.
Did he?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yes.
Okay. Can you mention the loss of Richard Bryars?
Days ago.
Seems like quite a long time ago, because we've lost so many other people in that time, haven't we? Really. So yes. Could you mention the loss of Richard Bryars? Obviously, he played the great caretaker. No, he wasn't. He was the chief caretaker.
Sadly, a couple of days ago, we lost Richard Bryars. In case you hadn't heard that.
Yeah. Well, he had a good life, didn't he?
Well, I hate that joke.
Yep.
good grief. There's also the fact that Patrick Bishop posted some footage from Galley on the 20 yeah. Megabyte Dot Two podcast.
He's a
Facebook
very
group.
Guy, isn't he?
He is. He says he uses technology. I don't believe him. He's tall.
I was just wondering.
It does look, but you watch it, it looks like he's very, very tall.
To what, yes. Does that mean the Staggering Stories people had to go to our page to watch that video?
Mm.
Good. So thank you, Patrick. That's why it was well worth doing. Yeah, that rather sums up news. Anybody got anything else while I do some research?
Yeah,
I was going to ask you something.
Research beforehand.
No, this is me talking about. I haven't got time to do that. I'm busy writing a book. I haven't got time to do research for podcasts.
Another one.
You're writing now.
The same one I've been writing for the last 2 months.
Which is?
Rolling Stones quiz book.
Oh, that one.
Or to sum it up, the 50 years of the Rolling Stones quiz book. As if of my publishers allow me to use
that
title.
Scary.
What's, wait a minute, what do you mean it's scary?
That they've been around 50 years.
Well, so is Doctor Who.
Yeah. Anyway, they haven't regenerated.
The funny thing.
Old.
The funny thing is. The fact that my mum saw them when they had to do one of their first gigs at the Marquee Club, and I saw them. My mum saw them at the Marquee Club when they did one of their first ones before they got famous. And then I saw them one of Bill Wyman's last gigs at Wembley Stadium in 1989. So I think I got you to say you saw them in some tour, but didn't quite hear what year it was. Sorry.
1989.
That's the same tour.
Steel
Wheels.
Just said that.
I didn't hear it because you were talking over it. The Steel Wheels tour. Yes, I saw the Urban Jungle tours when I saw it. Keith Richards got a septic finger and they had to cancel the concert, and then they rescheduled it, and I had to go back up to London. I got all the way from the Isle of Wight to London, only to find that on a chalkboard at a railway station saying the Rolling Stones concert had been cancelled. So I had to then go all the way back to the Isle of Wight. And then about a month later, had to go back to London again to watch the actual concert itself. So that was a real pain, that was, travelling all that way, only to find out when I'd got there they'd cancelled the concert.
Reese, the Stones are not boring.
No, they are not.
Hearing about him missing a concert kind of is.
Oh, be quiet.
Now I the love dogs. The Stones, I agree, but...
Now the Rolling Dog, I can say the Rolling Dog's trying to come in.
It's the Rolling Dog.
I remember after a great concert, it took us 3 hours to get out of the parking lot at the place.
I can remember not having a brilliant view at Wembley Stadium, but I remember doing lots of peacock noises and recording the concert on one of those little dictaphone things. I don't know where the tapes have gone for that recording, but I'd never ever be able to play it back. But I wish I could. I wish I could find them and find a way of transferring. It wouldn't be particularly good quality sound, but at least there'd be sound of the concert that I went to. And the frustrating side of it is that when they played the Isle of Wight Festival in 2007, the tickets sold so quickly I couldn't get one, so I didn't get to see them on that particular occasion.
Oh. I thought you lived close enough to where they have the Isle of Wight Festival that you could hear it.
True. But
the island's only a couple of blocks wide, isn't it?
Yeah.
Very funny. Yeah. Well, Walk the White... takes about 4 hours to do, and that's only by walking from Bembridge to Newport, which is 13 miles. But if you want to walk the whole way from Bembridge to Needles, that's 26 miles. How long does it take you to walk 26 miles? No comment.
But I walked 500 miles.
30 kilometres, please.
I think we're getting a bit distracted here from what... Oh, yeah, the Rolling Stones. Yeah, so that's a book I'm writing at the moment. It's the Rolling Stones... 50 years of the Rolling Stones quiz book. It's basically...
This podcast has gone from...
I've got to do... I'm trying to segue. Podcast. Be quiet, Mr. Parton. I'm trying to segue.
Podcast.
Be quiet. I'm trying to segue. I've got to get basically... I know. I've got to finish this podcast at some point. Magic! Get ready. God's sake.
Down, boy. Down.
He is down.
I was down.
Yeah, well, I'm sorry. The quiz book is basically a... It breaks up each sort of era of the Rolling Stones into five categories leading up to 500 questions. So I'm on the home straight in regards to the questions. But I tell you what, it's been great fun researching it and reading about all the things that happened and the Rolling Stones got up to over the years, and it was quite easy to provide 500 questions for that particular subject. And that
how
segues.
Did you pick Wikipedia for?
No Wikipedia. I don't. I did just to verify a couple of things. I try and anything I'm not sure of, I'll check a few sources to make sure that's the right date or the right people involved.
HP source.
Anyway, to segue. My Beatles quiz book is available now at Amazon and on iTunes, both in the United States and in Great Britain. I don't know about Australia. If you want to look that up in Australia, and can any of you Australian chaps do Amazon search to see if you can find my The Beatles quiz book on Amazon?
Find your songs on iTunes, though.
Yes, that's because iTunes decides to categorise anything as songs, even if it's a book. And also, obviously, as I've said before on previous podcasts, my first novel, The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin, which was published in 2005, the sequel is now available. I forgot to mention to Mary live, face-to-face here on the podcast, that she said about, oh, I only like paper books. Well, Unwilling Virgin is a paper book and an e-book, but its sequel, From Troy to Man, is now available as an e-book on Amazon or on iTunes. If you happen to have an iPhone, you can read it off your phone. If you happen to have an iPad, you can read it off your iPad. If you happen to have a Kindle, you can read it off your Kindle. They're not particularly expensive because they're e-books.
Can't read off my computer, though. Actually, yeah, because they're only about $100 or something.
You can...
How? I want you to show, tell me how, please.
How what?
You download the Kindle app and read it on a Kindle app on your PC.
Yeah, you can. Also, if you have the Kindle version and you want to read it on your iPad, you can download a Kindle app for your iPad. And I suspect for any other, like Samsung,
any other device,
tablet,
yeah,
that the Kindle apps are available for most devices. And so the book itself is only $3.99 in the UK, so it's not particularly expensive. And I've been told it's quite good. In fact, I did quite enjoy reading it back. It's quite. That was quite nice. I can hear crickets.
What? Sorry, I didn't think we were that boring.
So, yes.
Yeah.
Please, I'll reiterate. From Troy to Man, The Diary of an Accidental Father, which is a sequel to The Diary of an Unwilling Virgin. Both books available to download via iTunes or Amazon.
There you go, Robert. I just sent you a on the Skype messaging where to find the free reading app.
Cool. And, thank you very much.
And the Beatles quiz book is also an e-quiz book available on Amazon and iTunes. And this will be...
So that means I can buy it now. I can buy them both now and watch, read them.
Yes.
On my PC.
You can indeed.
Once I download.
Yes.
Yes.
Excellent.
I recommend it.
Do that all along.
Yes.
I just didn't know how to do it. Did I?
No, don't argue. Obviously, I will be mentioning this from now on, so because it's the only way I have of plugging it, other than the actual 20 megabyte page. There is a Diary of an Unwilling Virgin page on Facebook, which I have also published links for. That book and from Troy to Man on it. So that's the end of the plug.
What?
The end of the plug for this week. I did forget last week to mention, if you want to send in any feedback to the show, it's 20mb.feedback@gmail.com. Please do. It's lovely to hear from you, isn't it?
Yes.
Yes. I can hear crickets. Who's got the window open?
Me. I can hear crickets too.
It's hot, and it's nearly 11:30 in the evening.
All right, I have been trying to...
Oh, I do hear those crickets.
That's a very good sound effect.
I thought we were just getting boring.
Well, I think they think you are, but...
Yeah, very funny. Right. All right, so anybody got anything else? I'm just looking down our 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, for which we have another new member, who I'm now going to thank on air. Oh. Gordon Jones was added by Reese Parton on Wednesday. Hello, Gordon. Mm.
Gordon's in the video with the Saccharine Stories crew, and he went, oh, look at that. And then I said, yes, Patrick listens to us on the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, and obviously he started listening.
That's what I like to hear.
Hmm.
It's made me almost remember something else I wanted to mention. Oh, darn.
Who won .co.uk?
You could, yeah, do that while I try and remember something else. Who won
.co.uk?
Who said who.co.uk? A clip round the arrow.
Not me.
Who won .co.uk? Let's have a look, see what they got. If I can type it in correctly. Who
another
won?
Thing. Another thing we need to bring up is. While you were putting on the dog's dinner, which must be what you brought up, we were discussing when to record next week.
Right.
And because I just checked the calendar and Mary is correct, we only have one more weekend before we get so completely out of sync in time that it would be impossible for her to join us on a Monday morning, and you'd only have me for 1 hour for
okay.
about a month. So we should do Monday one more time before we shift to Sundays.
But that would only be a temporary shift to Sundays, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Okay.
But it would be until you catch up with summertime.
Okay. Which shall be the end of March.
Correct.
Well, magic, the end of time.
Magic has just let one go, and it really is bad.
Sure, it's you again, Adam.
No, it's not me. I like the smell of my farts.
Take photos when they do something.
No, I was taking a photo of the other two because it was funny. Right, the whowon.co.uk have got some things coming soon. We've got About Time 3, About Time 4, About Time 5. Aztec Special
Edition. It's about time.
Aztec Special Edition. It just says released 2013, so I haven't got a date for that yet. Companion Chronicles. Destiny of the Doctor, Vengeance of the Stones. And he said on Varus then.
Yeah.
And the Genesis of the Daleks set. All coming soon on whowon.co.uk. Buy them there. They're good chaps.
What's the Genesis of the Daleks set?
It's a set of figures. Genesis
of the
Daleks.
Is it like Davros and the Daleks and...
Shall I have a look for you? Because you sound quite interested in that, Robert. It's the Doctor, Davros, and two Daleks.
Huh.
Does that answer your question?
Is there a thing of Harry figure?
No, I didn't get any of what either of you said.
Is there a Harry figure?
A what figure? Harry, no. Harry, they should have a Harry figure, shouldn't they?
Yeah.
No, I agree. Right, and to the final thing I wanted to say was I bumped into Celia Imrie in the shop yesterday.
I hope you didn't hurt her.
She finally collected her twiglets, and I said, Celia, she said, hello, how are you? I said, I'm fine, thank you, how are you? She said, I'm fine. And I said, I run a podcast called the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who Podcast.
The Twiglet Podcast.
And I was wondering if you'd, be quiet, I was wondering if you'd come on for an interview after your episode's gone out. Oh, yes, or has it gone out yet? It's coming out soon, isn't it? I don't know. I said, that's probably going out in April. Oh, yes. Of course, yes, she said. So I said, next time she's on the island and I happen to see her in the shop, so that could be another couple of years, I will be able to arrange to have an interview with her. I can't guarantee she can come on the show, but as in when we're recording, but I'll be able to do an interview. But she's great. Yeah. She's quite nice. Quite a nice person. Celia Imrie, listeners.
When she finally decides to pick up her twiglets.
She's picked up her twiglets, although she had forgotten about them. We did give her the twiglets yesterday. So there we go. That's sort of it. I don't think there's anything else. Go to the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast Facebook group, because people are posting very interesting things on there these days. Videos and plugs for books.
Website.
Louise Jameson's website, that's right, and A Strange Connection Between the Worlds of Doctor Who and James Bond from Matthew Kressel and Ian Kirk. Yeah. Ian Kirk is even funnier on our Facebook group than he is in his feedback.
Except he finally noticed that we read his scripts beforehand and left out some of the jokes.
You read his scripts beforehand. I don't. I like the surprise of the audio.
Joke hit.
Yes, Adam.
It's true, actually. I like the surprise. That's why I don't look up Ice Warriors returning BBC. I don't look that up.
Ah, you
Adam.
Yes.
Adam.
Yes.
You know that thing about the strange connection between the worlds of Doctor Who and James Bond?
Yes.
That was actually to do with the, you know, the Doctor Who magazine with John Pertwee on the cover?
Oh, right, okay. No, I didn't. I haven't got that one.
Because that's the lost interview. It was from about 2004.
Oh.
And they decided to publish that. So it just talking about how John Pertwee apparently worked with Ian Fleming during the war or something.
Oh, okay. Cool.
Yeah.
And like I say, if you want to have a look at our Facebook group, please like it or join it or whatever, and join in the fun. And apart from that, we'll be back next week. Thank you for joining us. And until then.
On Monday.
Thank you, Kirby. On Monday, yes. Bye.
Is it going to be next Monday?
Bye.
Next Monday, yes.
Okay, bye.
Bye.
Bye. Bye.
Too long. You can't come back. I think you are still mad. You're out of touch, my baby. Not old-fashioned, baby. I say, baby, 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 you're out of touch. Well, baby, baby.
Sponsored by whoone.co.uk and is a proud member of the Doctor Who Podcast Alliance. Doctor Who is a trademark of the BBC. No copyright infringement intended.
The past is another country. 1987 is just the Isle of Wight.
Hello, I'm Adam.
And I'm Alicia.
And we do the 20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast, where I talk about Doctor Who in a very intelligent and fact-finding way. And Alicia, what do you do, Alicia?
Talk about loads of random stuff, basically.
What, anything to do with Doctor Who?
Sometimes, but
basically,
it's...
you hinder my attempts to talk about Doctor Who.
Yeah.
Yes.
That's own here.
That's basically the podcast.
To get on your nerves. And it's quite funny when I get on your nerves.
No, it isn't.
Yeah, it is.
No, it isn't.
Well, everybody else finds it funny, except
no,
me.
No, all right, you said. 20 Megabyte Doctor Who... I can't even say. What is it, Alicia?
20 Megabyte Doctor Who podcast.
Thank you.